Welcome to the Film Florida podcast. I'm John Lux, and I'm the executive director of Film Florida. Before we get to our interview, if you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.26 for our 2026 fundraising campaign. Visit the Film Florida merchandise page at filmflorida.creator-spring.com to purchase Film Florida t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and more. All merchandise proceeds go to the Film Florida Filmmaker Grant and Scholarship Fund. Florida resident Ellen Jacoby is an extremely accomplished casting director, having worked on many of Florida's most notable projects, including Burn Notice, The Waterboy, The Truman Show, Contact, Flipper, The Birdcage, True Lies, My Girl, and all the way back to Miami Vice, just to name a few. Ellen's esteemed career spans decades in the industry across multiple continents in commercials, movies, and television. She also teaches acting classes, trying to give back some of the knowledge she has acquired, casting more than 50 major films and TV shows, as well as over 500 commercials in both English and Spanish, helping more than 300,000 talent get work in the entertainment business. We talk all of this and more on this episode of the Film Florida Podcast. Here's my conversation with Ellen Jacoby. Welcome to the Film Florida Podcast, Ellen.
Why, thank you, John.
So give us your backstory. Help people understand where you're from.
I was born in Miami, raised in New York and New Jersey, and my parents wouldn't let me leave home until I was 21. When I was 21, I moved back to Miami. I was very young. I was in high school at 11 and college at 15. Wow. So I had my degree at 19. I still couldn't leave home. But then I did. I moved to Florida. And I had been studying singing and dancing my whole life and acting. And I started singing professionally when I came to Florida. And then I fell off the stage, broke my back, and then things started changing. And then I started playing backgammon.
I saw that.
And I started playing. I was 22 years old, playing all over the world. I became an international champion. My friends were Lucille Ball, Johnny Carson. I was a 22-year-old lunatic, yeah. And then a friend of mine was opening up a casting office and said, why don't you try it with me? My parents kept complaining. What is this jet setting all over the world? You know, kind of thing. Be a teacher. I had a teaching degree. That's not what I wanted to do. I didn't know what I had in mind. But it worked. And then it came time for a movie or my next backgammon tournament. So I opened up my own casting office.
Well, I mean, you mentioned a little bit there, but you did definitely had a unique path into casting and from your performance background. But what initially drew you to casting as a career? You mentioned that a friend brought you in a little bit, but was there a specific moment when you realized that there was something to there long term for you?
Not really. Not at the beginning. It just seemed that I had a choice to make. I was good at it. You know, with my background, and I've always said, great singers are great actors. You know how to tell the story. And it seemed like a natural thing when I was casting. And then it came time I was helping her out. And then it came time for my next backgammon tournament. And then I said, okay, I'm going to open my own office. But my parents kept bugging me. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, my parents have been extras in several of my movies.
So it's worked out for them. Now, you've been in the industry for a number of years, many years. How has the role of a casting director evolved since you first started?
I think it's become more recognized than it used to be. And now, I mean, it was barely a credit. Now you get awards at the Oscars, mm-hmm. So I think that's evolved. And I realized that directors and producers realize they need to have that person helping them to cast.
Yeah. It can't be just an afterthought for sure.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Now you've worked on numerous major projects in your career, both film and television. What do successful productions all seem to have in common from a casting perspective that you can kind of tell that this is going to be a good one or this is going to be a dumpster fire?
Well, it starts with good writers, but I think the director really has a lot to do with it. and that there's good communication between the producer, the writer, the director. When you mentioned things changing, when I first started, the writers didn't have a lot of power at all. Now they sit in on the casting sessions. You know, they've come up with a lot more power. And I think that that happens with the director and the producer to come to a meeting of minds that will help the casting director help select the people that would be right for the roles.
Now, when you approach a new project, you mentioned the importance of the director. What is your process for understanding the director's vision and translating that into casting choices?
Well, I like to actually speak with the director. A lot of times you don't. Mm. You know, you'll speak with the producer or, you know, a production manager or something. But no, I really like to talk to the director and I really like to talk to the writer and see where they're going with it. Because, you know, they've started with a blank piece of paper and written a script. And when we get a script, it's all white, hundreds of pages, all white papers. Then all of a sudden we have to replace some of the white ones with pink ones and blue ones and green ones and salmon ones. And by the time we start production, there's no white pages left. Mm-hmm. So, you know, change is good so long as you work within their mindset and their mind frame.
Good. Now, you've cast for both principal roles as well as background talent, including your parents, of course. For those that might not be talent or necessarily in the business, how does the casting process differ when you're looking for principal cast versus just kind of those background roles?
Well, it's two totally different things, you know, and I'm doing a major film, as many of my films and TV have been. They're union, so I'm looking for union actors, or I'm looking for a really great actor who's looking to dying to join the union, because a lot of actors don't understand if I hire a non-union actor in a union production, we can get a fine. We don't have that problem with extras in film in Florida. Florida's totally different. We can use non-union extras as background. So that really does help getting the people, unless you need real people to fulfill roles. And I do like to use real people. I know when I did Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and I thought this was kind of interesting, I needed a SWAT team. And I don't think I could hire actors that could learn how to run with the equipment, in the costumes, in all that, and hit the ground running and do all that kind of stuff. So I went to get real SWAT team. And I did that with True Lies too. The difference with True Lies, I needed them several days. And I went to the Miami SWAT team whom I had used before, and they could not guarantee me if something should happen that they would have to take the SWAT team off set. But you think of Miami, which is, you know, drug kingpins and all kinds of crimes, that they had one SWAT team. I went to Fort Lauderdale to use their SWAT team. Fort Lauderdale has three SWAT teams.
Wow.
And Miami had one. So they could guarantee me, unless it was a major disaster, they could guarantee me that the SWAT team would stay there, be with me the whole time. So sometimes you really need to use the real people.
And what was the process like there when you have to use real people in roles that may have been earmarked for SAG-AFTRA people?
If they're that good, you know, SAG-AFTRA people started out without being SAG-AFTRA as well. So if you're really looking to be an aspiring actor, you're aspiring to be SAG-AFTRA. Mm-hmm. You really are.
Yeah.
I think that it's really important for people that are aspiring actors to see how they want to proceed, if they really do. If they're just trying it out, you can tell that too. But if someone has their heart set on being an actor, it shows. And I will try to help any good aspiring actor that I can.
Yeah. In the case of the SWAT team, though, I mean, those people probably weren't looking to be actors or actresses, right? So how was that process working with them?
It was great.
Yeah.
It was great. They were perfect because they knew exactly what to do, you know, and how to do it. It was really great. You know, I did a show years ago when I first started out called Mortal Kombat up in Orlando.
Sure.
And I would go to the different events that featured the Mortal Kombat kind of fighting and all that kind of stuff. And I found a girl that I thought would be great. I wanted to find extras to work every day. And the beauty of it, we could change their look. We could change their hair, drape their face, do all kinds of things so you wouldn't really recognize them every day. And she never complained, never said, oh, are we done yet? And she was there for me for the first two seasons every day.
Wow.
And then I got a job in for, and it was $50 a day back then. And then I got a job in Miami that was paying 20 grand for a hair job shooting in South Africa. And they loved all the people in South in Miami that came to the casting, but they said they wanted something a little bit more unusual, a little more exotic. And I said, this is that girl. So I had her come down to Miami. She booked it. Wow. So for $15 a day, she went to a $20,000 job. And now she's starring on a TV series.
That's great.
If you really want it and you apply yourself, you can do it. Not only in acting, but in any profession.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, it's funny, brought up Mortal Kombat. I was working at the Disney MGM studios right down the street there at the post-production studio when Mortal Kombat was going on. So I remember that show very, very well. Is there one casting decision, maybe two, you know, is something in your past that completely transformed the way a project might have been perceived, you know, like just because the perfect person fit the perfect role?
The way I perceived it?
Yes, yes.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I had to audition for the role of casting director. Just like talent audition, I had to meet for the movie True Lies. And what they did was they spoke to several casting directors and they had to send pictures. We had to do submissions of how we saw the different roles. And then they would pick the casting director they wanted to do it. And they picked me. I was the only one who sent a female as a spy. I thought that was kind of interesting. And that's why they chose me. So sometimes you have to think outside the box.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you've mentioned a couple of the titles that you've done here in Florida. You've done extensive casting work, including some Burn Notice, The Truman Show, Flipper, Birdcage, My Girl, all the way back to Miami Vice. What makes Florida a unique place to cast compared to just any other market that's out there?
I'm not that sure that it's that unique. At the time that we were so busy, it became more unique because everybody wanted to come here to film. You can film here year round.
Right.
And we don't only have beaches.
Right.
We have Everglades. We have farms. We have horses. We have everything that you could want. Even mountains, believe it or not. When I did the Tom Cruise movie, the whole thing was filmed in Hollywood, but it was all shot here. The whole thing that took place in California was shot here. And they did the Hollywood sign that's up in the mountains. Mm-hmm. They did that at the Pompano Dump.
Oh, okay.
So you can make Florida anything, any time period, which is also true. And it's so great not to have to deal with weather. You know, the worst thing you have to deal with is mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Do you have a favorite Florida-based production that you worked on?
I don't know, because I have so many stories and so many favorite stories from different productions, you know, but I don't know if I really have one.
Well, give us a story that you like.
A story I like. I liked when I did Parenthood. Ron Howard was amazing to work with, and it was his birthday. And he liked mariachis, which I found out. Mm-hmm. And there's a family of mariachis in Miami, 15 of them that performed together. I asked them, and they all came up to Orlando to perform for Ron Howard's birthday. Now, there's different things that you do to make people smile and make people happy. And I think when you make people smile, it makes you happy and smiling.
And typically when you have a happy cast and crew, you have a better production.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you've worked with talent ranging from Jim Carrey to Will Smith to Ron Howard. You've played a significant role in shaping the industry through your work. Is there a memory that you have from your work with notable talent that people would enjoy hearing?
Well, I do have kind of like a few, but I have one that kind of stands out. Is when I did Ace Ventura, Pet Detective with Jim Carrey, we became friends, very good guy. And then I followed up doing The Truman Show with him.
Right.
And that was in Destin, Florida. I was born in Miami. That was the first time I found out that Florida had two time zones. I didn't know that. So I'm working on The Truman Show with Jim, and Contact calls me if I could just run down to the Cape, you know, to NASA for a few days to catch a launch. So I run down there, and it was amazing, just amazing to be there. And then when I went back to the Truman Show, I told Jim, I said, oh my God, this is amazing. You have to come to the next launch with me. But then we hit some bad weather on the Truman Show. And then he went back to LA and went back to Miami. About a month later, he calls me. When's the next launch? So I got in touch with my contacts at NASA. And Jim flew in and I flew up from Miami. And we had a private tour of everything. We saw the launch. They let us buddy suit up in the astronauts' outfits.
Wow.
That was truly one amazing experience. I even got to go in a shuttle. So how many people get to do that?
That's amazing. Of course, completely unrelated to filming is the best story that you come up with. But that's so perfect. That's how it happens on set a lot of times. So you've worked on lots and lots of projects, helped hundreds, if not thousands, of actors find work. What is the biggest mistake you see actors make in auditions?
One? I'm only allowed to take one.
No, you can make a list as long as you need.
I would think one of the worst things is they don't come on time. I know that sounds crazy, but they don't come on time. I have never been late to a set, never. And I thought I was going to be late one time because I had caught a train, but we all catch trains. But when the train went by, it came back and went backwards. I said, oh my gosh. But meanwhile, I wasn't late. I've never been late. And I don't think talent should be late. It sets off negative. And the other thing is if they're not prepared properly, you need to be prepared and you need to be dressed accordingly. I was doing a casting not too long ago for a very expensive restaurant scene, a very elegant couple ordering wine from the sommelier, and a girl came to audition in torn jeans and a t-shirt. The director's not going to get a vision of what he's looking for if I send that to him. So you have to be on time. You have to be prepared and be dressed accordingly.
Those are great. It's amazing that those little things are what is really important. Yeah, yeah. Now, when, you know, similarly, like I've never sat in a casting session for a long period of time. I've sat in here and there when, you know, I've been around. But is there something, one or two things or something you think about, like you're in a casting session, you're sitting there, you're seeing people over and over. Is there something that makes you kind of sit up in your chair and be like, this one's interesting? Is there anything that makes somebody stand out like the first time they start speaking or you see them? Is there anything like that?
Yes, absolutely. And it's talent. It's really talent. They own the role. They become, and you think you're watching the real person doing this. They're not an actor trying to perform or trying to be someone else. They actually immerse themselves and take it home within them. And it's wonderful. And you can tell it just shines.
That's interesting. Now, how do actors or how should actors approach auditions differently today versus, say, 10 years ago, especially when we're talking about self-taping now versus, you know, that didn't even exist or it existed, but in a different way previously. But what are something that an actor should do to make sure that they are approaching their audition to stand out?
It's not easy, but they do have certain advantages with everything being virtual. When you'd come in to audition for me in person, no props are allowed because you'd be sitting there with the prop in your hand for the whole audition. The beauty of virtual is you can have a bench nearby or a table nearby or something so that if the phone rings, you have to answer the phone in your audition, you answer the phone, then you put it back down, it's gone from your hand. So you can use props if you use them properly. And the advantage in that is what I teach is how to work outside the rectangle box to make yourself believable. You own the whole room, so you can learn how to work outside the rectangle box by passing things or using things without your empty hand showing. So you lean forward to pass someone something, you take it back, and people believe you because they don't see the empty hand. So I try to teach them how to work virtually. Plus, you can tape it several times on your phone and see why one works better than another. Certain expressions work better than others. And then you get to see why you want to submit this instead of that.
Yeah, no, that's good. Now, you mentioned your acting classes and the stuff that you teach. Tell us a little bit about more and the services that you offer there and why.
I teach acting because at this point in my life, I want to give back to. And I love seeing people make it. I'm probably the only casting director who teaches acting, and I have producers come to my acting class to see if there's any talent when I'm booking for something for a movie or something, that they could come and take a look and see if there's anybody that they want. And then it's great for the talent because the people that come, the producers, they usually give them something to a situation to ad lib, which is really great stuff. And my basic things that I teach is first is positivity. This is a business of rejection. You've right. got to maintain positivity. You've got to be believable. If people don't believe you, forget about it. And lastly, control. You have to realize you are the one who is in control of everything. You're in control of if you get there on time. You're in control of what you wear, how you behave. And I try to teach them, aside from working outside the box, how to behave. And then the beauty of also that is that I teach them how to film themselves so that they look proper. I mean, some people send in a tape of themselves. You see the head, then the chest, then the hips, then the legs, then the feet. You know, that's not what we want to see. We want a full body shot. So I teach them what we really need, what they need to even have a shot.
Good, good. What are some of the trends that you're seeing, whether it's, you know, film, television, commercials, in your casting life? What are some of the trends?
It seems like it's not as model-y, quote, model-y, as it used to be. More real type people. And it is changing in the fact that there's a lot more independent productions going on. It's not all A-list actors now. They're opening up to so many more independent productions. There's a whole change going on in Hollywood. And there's a whole shift of opening up in Las Vegas, movie world. And there's a lot of filming going abroad, which is another thing. I tell everybody, have a passport.
Mm-hmm.
I've done several commercials for cruise lines. And you need to have a passport. And one person didn't have it. And I thought they checked them all because I checked it and I didn't catch it. And then neither did production. And they wouldn't let him back in the United States.
Oh, God.
So you have to know, be aware. When you have a meeting with a producer, a writer, a director, look them up before you go. It's like I say to students, new students in my class, did you look who look me up? Do you see who I am? Some say yes. And I say, that's what you're supposed to do. It's like if I go for a meeting or an interview, I look them up. Who am I meeting with? What do we have in common?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that rejection that you've mentioned and some of the mental health part of it. You know, like I'm a sports guy. So if a quarterback completes 60% of his passes, he's good. In basketball, if somebody makes 50% of their shots, they're good. If, you know, baseball player gets a hit 3 out of every 10 times, they're good. In the acting world, if you get one part out of however many, you're doing great. That's a lot of rejection. How do you help and try and teach people to cope with that level of rejection?
They have to be positive. That's the first thing I teach. You must be positive. It usually comes down to 3 or 4 for the finals, for the callbacks. And at that point, you've got to know that you are good or you wouldn't be there. It's now your size, your height, your weight, your hair color, you know, for chemistry for the other people that you're going to be in the cast with. If it's a TV series, I have totally found this to be true, that if 3 people make it to callbacks, but only 1 person's going to book it, the other 2 eventually will be booking in this TV series because they rise to the top. They're the top-notch actors. However, it's not that easy to take. So I tell the actors, you have to be positive with it because, you know, if it's a movie, you don't have another shot. But you have to be able to know inside that you're good and you did a good job. If you didn't, you're going to know that as well.
Sure.
But if you feel that you really did a good job, you're not quite sure why you didn't get the part, know that maybe they wanted someone who was taller, someone who was shorter, someone who was brunette, someone who was blonde. You know, it's out of your hands at that point, but it's not out of the casting director's hands. We know that you were good and you'll be back.
Yeah. And that's the important part of truly loving the process if you're an actor, right? Because you have to love the audition process and the taping process and those type of things. Because if you're only in it for the job, to get the job, you can't survive because you just don't get enough of them, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. For someone interested in breaking into the field as a casting director, what steps do they take? How is that a field that someone can kind of pursue?
The best acting schools I have found are up in New York, but I would definitely pursue taking some classes and learning. You can't learn too much in any field, and you have to practice in any field. If you want to be a doctor, it's time consuming and it takes practice. It's the same thing as an actor. You must take your time, work on it, be serious about it, and know that you're going to be able to move forward the best you can. And I also tell everybody, how do I say this? Do not have regrets. Do things. And if it doesn't work out, my theory is sometimes, you know, the saying, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I've made my own. Sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. Mm-hmm. So if you don't make it, you've learned from it and you won't make that mistake again. But my grandfather told me, he said, Ellen, don't ever really, if you really want to do something, go for it. Don't ever have any regrets. And of course, if you really want to do it, you're going to devote everything to it, your mind, your body, your soul.
Yeah. Yeah. Ellen, these days, everybody has social media. Talk about the importance of that from an actor standpoint and what an actor or actress needs to be aware of when it comes to their social media presence.
Very, very important. You must be on social media now. Even kids, everybody's got to be on social media. Believe it or not, I got a job where I was told I wouldn't be able to take anybody with less than a certain number of followers. So they are looking for social media. They feel it gives them a built-in audience. The thing is, what is so important, never post anything controversial. We don't want to know what your sex is. We don't want to know what your political is. And we don't want to know what your religion is. Keep it to the acting forum. And it's so important. Join acting groups. But again, remember, don't pay any money. Join legitimate things. If they're not legitimate, leave them. And you'll see there's many people like you out there that are dying to do this. And it's so very important to build up your following.
Ellen, where can people learn more about you, your projects, your classes? Tell people where they can find you.
Well, I guess you could put my name on Google. I have everything out there. And go to my website, ellenjacobicasting.com. And I think that's pretty much, you know, you can look up anybody nowadays and everything's out there. One other thing that I do very strongly, do not spend any money. Unless you're taking a course, an acting class or something. You'll see ads all the time. You want to get a shot at being in this. It's a casting. And you only have to pay this and that. No. Not right. You need a talent agent. People have to understand the difference between a casting director and a talent agent. Everybody wants me to represent them. I cannot. Mm-hmm. If I represented them, those would be the only people I would show the director. So this way, I'm unbiased. I show the director the best from anywhere, from all the different agents. And I think it's very, very important that talent understand this and don't get taken in because there are so many scams. I've had so many people come to me. Well, I spent $6,000. Well, I spent $11,000. And please don't, especially now, it's getting worse. So please look at the legitimacy of anything you want to do.
Right, right. It's actually harder and harder to find out if something is legit, and it's easier and easier to do scam stuff right now. And actually, I'm glad you brought that up because our organization spent a lot of time a couple of years back, and we still have it on our website where we put together a whole kind of one sheet. I think it's actually more than one page, but we call it a one sheet on avoiding scams in the talent industry because you're right, it is a terrible problem. I received those type of scam emails and I'm not even a part of the talent. So you can tell that they're going after. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So
Terrible.
Ellen, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us today, share your story, share your insight, and obviously, you know, some of the great stories from your amazing career. This has been a lot of fun. We appreciate you being on the Film Florida podcast.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I enjoyed this very much, John. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Film Florida podcast. For more information about Film Florida, go to filmflorida.org and like or follow our social media pages. If you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.26 for our 2026 fundraising campaign. Check out the Film Florida merchandise at filmflorida.creator-spring.com. And please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.